boundary between the worlds. Quantum physicists' excursion into the microscopic realm of atoms is an adventure that could be compared with the great journeys of discovery that astronomers took into the outer limits of celestial space. The exploration of quantum physics into the realm of the really small is a mirror image of those who explore the outer world, but in the opposite direction. And yet, quantum physics has discovered that there is a mysterious connection between the worlds of the really small and the really big. It is a mistake to think that quantum theory is limited to the microworld. To quote physicist N. David Merman, to restrict quantum mechanics to be exclusively about piddling laboratory experiments is to betray the great enterprise. A serious formulation will not exclude the big world outside the laboratory. Quantum theory points out that the real world is not classical, but quantum mechanical. Rather than the quantum realm being illusory, quantum physics points out that the appearance of the macroscopic conventional world can be likened to a holographic optical illusion produced by the interaction of our sense faculties with quantum reality. Quantum theory insists that our everyday world is embedded in quantum reality, that our day-to-day world is quantum through and through, which is to say that the quantum realm is not separate from the world of ordinary objects. The world of the very small is coextensive with the world at large. There are not two separate domains of nature, one macroscopic and one microscopic. Our world is quantum at all scales. The quantum permeates all of existence. Wheeler writes, "So what does the quantum have to do with the universe? Perhaps everything, because in any fundamental theory of existence, the large and the small cannot be separated. Quantum theory applies to big things as well as small. We can't get to first base without quantum theory in dealing with such large-scale objects as stars, for example." Speaking of the classical and quantum worlds, Wheeler writes, "Yet these two worlds are linked. They must be linked. Looked at closely enough, the classical world around us is nothing but a collection of quantum systems. And yet, our everyday world, with its chairs, trees, and people, seems, at least to all appearances, not to be quantum at all, but quite real and solid, very much in alignment with classical physics' version of reality, with its one-at-a-time sequence of definite actualities. When we throw a baseball, for example, it has a continuous trajectory that can be measured. This is very different from probabilistic quantum entities, which are discontinuous, can take multiple routes to get somewhere at the same time, and get to where they're going in no time at all. And yet, quantum theory tells us that baseballs are quantum objects too. They have a cloud of probability which collapses from uncertainty to certainty, but their quantum fluctuations are so microscopically small compared to their macroscopic size that they are entirely below the threshold of observation. The elementary particle and the baseball differ only in scale, not in principle." To quote physicist Hideo Mabuchi, "It is as if the universe were ruled by atoms' aversion to the public embarrassment of quantum behavior writ large." In the transition from the random uncertainty of the quantum realm, where particles ceaselessly spring into and out of existence, to the seeming solidity and orderly certainty of our everyday world, the question naturally arises, where is this boundary between the quantum world, where things don't actually exist in a real way, but in a state of potentiality, and our everyday world, where things at least appear to exist in a solid-seeming way? Wheeler asks the question, if the world out there is writhing like a barrel of eels, why do we detect a barrel of concrete when we look? How do the classical and quantum worlds join together? To quote Alday, it is very difficult to see how all the funny business going on at the atomic scale can lead to the regular, reliable world we spend our lives in. The quantum reality of the microworld is inextricably entangled with the classical reality of the macroworld, as the part has no meaning except in relation to the whole. Paradoxically, in quantum physics, the macroworld determines, through the act of macroscopic observer participancy, the microscopic reality that it itself is made of. And if the ordinary-seeming classical realm manifests out of the underlying quantum domain, where did the weirdness or funny business of the quantum realm go? The moment of observation appears to be the link between the uncertainty of the quantum world and the apparent certainty of the classical world, for observation is the point at which what might happen crystallizes into what does happen. As Heisenberg writes, the transition from the possible to the actual takes place during the act of observation. This brings up the question, how does the act of observation, of gaining mere information, knowledge, or software, modify the state of macroscopic things, hardware? Good question, I imagine Wheeler saying. According to quantum theory, the whole universe is in a quantum state, which is to say that at least in principle, there ultimately is no boundary between the microscopic/quantum realm and the macroscopic/classical realm. Though some physicists still cling to the idea that these two realms are separate, others consider it delusional to conceive of there being a sharp distinction between the two. Still others are of the opinion that the line separating the classical from the quantum world is to a large degree arbitrary, of our own choosing. Wheeler playfully comments, I know that in that empty courtyard, many a game cannot be a game until a line has been drawn, it does not matter where, to separate one side from the other, even if neither you nor I know how to define that line. In any case, the line between the classical and quantum worlds is a mobile boundary that is hard to pin down. In another example of how far from the traditional physicist Wheeler is, in The Frontiers of Time, he has an imaginary dialogue, as an example of active imagination, with a colleague in another realm of thought. His imaginary colleague asks Wheeler, May I question you now about the game itself? How would you describe it if forced to commit yourself? Wheeler responds, Let us try to squeeze an answer into three sentences. The universe is a self-excited circuit. As it expands, cools, and develops, it gives rise to observer participancy. Observer participancy, in turn, gives what we call tangible reality to the universe. There is a linguistic gulf between the world of quantum phenomena and the classical world of everyday experience. The quantum domain and the classical domain require two different ways of speaking. From one point of view, the location of the line demarcating the classical from the quantum reflects the point at which physicists stop using one vocabulary and start using the language of the other. The best way to become confused is to try to talk about the classical world in the vocabulary of quantum theory, or vice versa. In other words, we run into problems when we try to import classical, large-scale concepts into the subatomic domain, concepts that have no business being there. The necessity of shuttling back and forth between the two forms of language can easily create misunderstandings, since in many cases, the same words are employed in both languages. We should not intermingle these two languages, which is to say, we need to develop our capacity for more subtle and nuanced modes of thinking. Ludwig Wittgenstein was of the opinion that many of the great philosophical problems were really non-problems, and that they are confusions generated by the misuse of language. This brings up an interesting question. What follows from talking about reality in one way or the other? What do we gain, and what price do we pay for adopting one vocabulary and giving up another? Things that are transforming from one state to another have an interesting logic. When something changes from having a property to not having a property, there is a moment in between when in some sense it both has the property and does not have the property. Aristotle was quite interested in this in-between stage. For example, when an egg is changing into a chicken, there is a moment when it is both egg and chicken, and neither egg nor chicken. In any case, it certainly seems as if the boundary that simultaneously connects and separates two different states, be it egg and chicken, or the quantum world and the everyday classical world, is an extremely interesting place, the exploring of which could bring about great insights. This interfacing between the classical and quantum world is mirrored in the realm of the psyche. Jung writes, Somewhere our unconscious becomes material. Somewhere there is a place where the two ends meet and become interlocked. And that is the place where one cannot say whether it is matter or what one calls psyche. This is the place where it is impossible to distinguish between matter and psyche, as if the opposites are revealing their inseparability and interconnection with each other to the point where we can't tell them apart. The boundary between the classical and quantum worlds is mirrored in the psyche by the boundary between the conscious and the unconscious. Wheeler sounds like a depth psychologist when he writes, The line between the unconscious and the conscious begins to fade. Jung would add that in actuality, there is no clear boundary demarcating the conscious from the unconscious. One begins where the other leaves off. The question is, what happens at the boundary in the moment when one turns into the other? Where is the line between us and the world? Is the need to even draw such a line an old habit of mind that the emerging quantum gnosis is helping us to erase by revealing it to be unnecessary, misleading, and possibly even non-existent?